Turning our attention now to the rule of Saint Benedict, in this version and in this my translation, we see that the text, which is unique to Benedict, has been put in boldface type so that you can immediately recognize it. That is, you can immediately see what Benedict has added or modified substantially from what he receives from the rule of the Master. And if we look just for a moment at the general outline of the text, look at the very beginning, that in the introduction, verses 1 through 4 are entirely Benedict's own, although there are resonances with things that one finds in the prologue of the Master, in the theme Pater, and a little bit of the theme sequence in the first four verses. They are substantially Benedict's own introduction. If we then drop down to the very end of the prologue, we see that this happens again, beginning in verses 46 and continuing with verse 49. And in particular there, in the latter part, we discover that Benedict's unique contribution is in a definition of the school of the Lord's service, which, as we'll see, is very different from that of the Master. In the beginning of the prologue, moving back up to the very top, Benedict begins also with an admonition to hear the words of the Master and to, as it were, open up the inner ear, the ear of the heart, to fulfill them, because you have a loving Father. This is not said at the very beginning of the Master's rule, although the idea of a loving voice is found in the theme of the Master. Benedict insists that we listen to the voice of the Lord, which comes to us primarily from God, but also which we receive from the voice of the superior, of the teacher in the school of the Lord's service, and it is a loving voice that we hear. Noticing if we just drop down again to kind of glance at boldface type, what we'll find dropping way down towards verse 19 is that one of the things he adds is dearest brother, carissime fratres, in a text that he takes over from the Master. Benedict's modifications are very often in the direction of making this rule which he inherits and uses more livable, more compassionate, more gentle. For him, asceticism, Christian spiritual practice, is undertaken out of joy and out of love. So he very often modifies texts he receives in ways that allows the joy and the enthusiasm, something like the Latin equivalent, what he calls the zelus in chapter 72 of the rule, what we saw in St. Antony's biography as prothumia, as enthusiasm or excitement about Christian spiritual exercise, Christian spiritual progress. For Benedict, that's the basis for ascetical practice. Moving back up again to the top of the rule, notice that it is the loving Father that one hears. We return to God through the labor of obedience, from whom we had departed through the laziness of disobedience. So part of Christian spiritual progress, part of our project, of our exercise, is going to be to overcome, after acknowledging the fact that we are lazy, and that we need to undertake a project that helps us overcome that. He uses the model then, having introduced the idea of a turn through laziness, he uses the model of spiritual combat, of spiritual warfare, that there are strong and what he calls bright weapons, which are obedience. Obedience finally to the word and the will of God, but lived out in the context of the community. And although we're not going to look at the concluding chapters of the rule, for Benedict, obedience is not only to the superior, it's also exercised in one's relationships to one another. So these weapons, these tools, these exercises that will enable us to overcome the laziness that has caused us to turn from God is going to be found in Benedict's rule in an obedience, a listening to and a hearing the truth in the other that happens both in the superior and in those with whom one lives. Now, what he then does is to, having summarized what he thinks is the best parts of the prologue and the theme Pater, Benedict now includes a significant portion of the theme sequence of the Master, that is the commentaries on Psalms 34 and Psalm 14 or 15. And this is very well worth looking at. We'll find a strong kind of dialogical encouragement to, in a very beautiful way, opening our eyes to the deifying light. And this is an image Benedict gets from the Master, the light that utterly transforms us, opening our ears to the voice that calls out to us. And these things he does take, as we've mentioned, from the Master. But let's drop down past his commentaries. I'm noticing that in verse number 23, he asks the question, who shall dwell in the tent of the Lord, who shall rest on God's holy mountain, and this is found in Psalm 15. He then goes on to move towards that very powerful image which the Master concludes with, and here it's in verse 45 of Benedict's prologue, we have therefore to establish a school of the Lord's service. Now remember that for the Master, the school is a place where you are exclusively obedient to the Master, and where the school means the pain of suffering the imitation of Christ. And though that notion is found to some extent in verse 50, which he quotes literally from the Master's rule, but notice what he inserts first. He modifies the notion of the school. For Benedict in verse 46 and 47, in instituting this school, we hope to establish nothing harsh, nothing oppressive, nihil asperum, nihil grave. He wants this school to be a place that is not just a constant experience of limitation and of pain, but on the contrary, if there is limitation, he says it's to be found at the beginning. He says it's at the very beginning of the way of life, which is narrow, angusta, in verse 48. But the purpose of there being any narrowness is not simply to, in an almost sadistic sort of way, induce suffering for suffering's sake because it's mysteriously good for you, but rather Benedict says, in this beautiful explanation, if there is something strict, it's because of the dictates of equity that things might be good for all concerned, not just for one, but so that all can live together. For the amendment of vices, the recognition that there is stuff in us that needs to change, and he says, for the preservation of caritas, mutual love. So for Benedict, the school, if it includes narrowness at the beginning, as it will, it's for the sake of compassion, for the sake of allowing vices to be transformed and love to be preserved. So he says, don't run away in sadness because, and this is the most beautiful description of Christian progress in the to be found, maybe in the whole of the rule, but certainly in the prologue, and that's in verse 49, in which he modifies a verse from Psalm 119, 118, as we advance in this way of life and faith, our hearts open wide, dilettato corde. So for him there is an enthusiasm, there is a zeal, which committing oneself to this progress, to this spiritual exercise, which is described in a metaphorical way by the opened out heart. Suddenly, we can hold within us things that were not possible before. And this way of life that may involve certain restrictions, certain narrowness, is one that involves unspeakable sweetness, a delectio, a dulcis, which is indescribable, inerabile, he says. And that is a beautiful description of what we will look at as the apophatic way, the discovery of the fact that in our relationship with Christ, there is a kind of an experience of opening out to a presence for which we have no holding places in our hearts, an indescribable and an unspeakable sweetness of love that enables us not simply to observe, not simply to passively receive, but Benedict says to run. Dulcedine curitur. This sweetness is for the sake of enabling us to run. So he uses the metaphor of the athlete, the one who is committed to a way of exercise, of ongoing progress, because literally the innermost self is expanded, made capable of things it could otherwise never do. And so this way of God's commandments, this idea of asceticism, of spiritual exercise, is for Benedict, one of widening, of sweetness, of an unspeakable encounter that transcends words in our experience of God. And it's in that context that Benedict can then copy from the Master, this idea of participating in the Passion of Christ, but it's for the sake of allowing us also to become partakers of the kingdom. We run together on this way of God's commandment so that all of us experiencing the limitation that may entail a participation in Christ's passion, an experience of being misunderstood, of discovering the more painful aspects of community, this enables us also to partake in Christ's kingdom. So we see a very beautiful, delicate, and subtle but very substantial modification of the elements of the Master's rule, which, although brilliant in its conception, in its introduction, needed a substantial modification to be a livable way of Christian asceticism, of Christian spiritual progress, of a model, of an introduction to Christian exercise.